Hello and welcome to Astro Talk UK. AT UK is a not-for-profit 30-minute weekly audio podcast primarily for and by amateur astronomers in the UK. Available only online, AT UK is a virtual meeting point for the amateur astronomy community. Each episode is an MP3 file which can be downloaded automatically with a free subscription via one of the many podcast readers. I use iTunes. My name is Gurbir Singh, and I host AT UK. I am not a scientist, nor am I an astronomer. Topics of discussion have no fixed boundaries other than their relevance to amateur astronomy. Each week's episode consists of pre-recorded conversations with individuals discussing their roles, lives, and achievements of amateur astronomers and their hobby. More about AT UK at www.astrotalkuk.org. If you have a topic for discussion, drop me a note on info@astrotalkuk.org. Astrotalk UK, amateur astronomy, expert opinion. Episode 13, Sunday, April the 27th, 2008. Rockets. How much does the UK spend on space research per year? £1 billion? Perhaps a few hundred million? Surprisingly, the total bill for the UK civil space programme is around £224 million, just a fraction of the annual premiership payroll. Space research, how is it best done? Manned spaceflight or robotic probes? You may have seen the report from the British UK Space Exploration Working Group, insisting that Britain can get two British astronauts to the space station costing less than £75 million over 5 years by commercially engaging the Russian Soyuz program rather than the annual £60 million cost of going with ESA, or indeed developing, or should that be redeveloping, a British launch capability. The Astronomer Royal, on the other hand, insists that unmanned space research is the way to go. You will get heck of a lot more science done for your money, especially under the current financial climate. I've included a couple of links which provide further details on these topics in the episode 13 notes on astrotalkuk.org. In today's episode, Dr. Lucy Rogers, a rocket scientist, talks about a new book on rocket science that even your mum may enjoy. But first, Dave and Leslie Wright from the British Rocketry Oral History Programme, BROP, reminisce about the early days when Britain had its own launch capability and the UK Space Conference that they host each year. A very special welcome to the very first husband and wife team to AstroTalk UK, Dave and Leslie Wright. What's BROP?
BROP is the British Rocket Oral History Programme.
And how long have you been involved with that now?
Well, Nick Hill and I started it just over 10 years ago now, and we started looking at the history of the British rocket programmes going from the 1950s through to 1971, and then it kind of just grew.
What triggered it? Why BROP?
Well, I was always interested. Well, I'm a historian, I was always interested in history, and I was interested in space and rockets, as a lot of kids are. And I decided that I wanted to do a PhD, and I decided I'd like to do the PhD on the British rocket programme Blue Streak, the largest of the British rockets.
That had quite a lot of success, but then it was pulled. What happened to Blue Streak?
Well, the simple explanation of why it was cancelled, twice. The first time it was cancelled as a weapon, the second time it was cancelled as a satellite launcher. The first time, the usual explanation for its cancellation is that it was liquid-fueled and it was vulnerable to a preemptive attack. But in actual fact, there was a lot more politics involved than that, and a lot of inter-service rivalry.
It's 2008 now. Blue Streak's quite old. Is it something that you think British government should resurrect?
No, I think that history teaches us that it's always time to be looking to the future and adopting new technology. I think one of the lessons of Blue Streak is that British engineers and scientists were very, very successful at what they attempted to do, and on relatively small sums of money achieved a great deal. And I think that's a lesson that we can learn, that perhaps we don't trumpet our successes and invest in those successes quite as consistently as perhaps we should do.
Terrific research, but not much on development in the UK. It's history, I suppose, not just of space, but science and technology in general. Recently, you've got Japan, India, China, with their own launch vehicles. Is that something that Britain should be looking at again?
Getting something into space is obviously very expensive and obviously very important. And the key to actually exploiting space in the future must be to do it more cheaply than it's being done at the moment. I think that we're looking at the possibility of a paradigm shift. Instead of using the conventional rockets that we're used to, that we will be moving towards using space planes and or other new technologies to get into space. If we can bring the cost of putting satellites and other probes and other bits of technology into orbit a magnitude cheaper than it is now, the possibilities of exploiting space-based technology will increase vastly. And I think that the economics dictate that that has to happen at some point. The person who can actually come up with a way of making getting into space cheap is going to make Bill Gates look like a poor man.
Oh, Bert Rutan and Scale Composites won the XPRIZE. Yeah. Is that the start of the new paradigm that you had in mind?
Yes, I think that it may take us a long time to get beyond the achievements of Rutan and people like that, but it's clear that they're pointing the way to new possibilities.
And is there a role for Britain in all that, do you think?
Yes, I think so. Alan Bond won the Sir Arthur Clarke Award this year as space entrepreneur. And his work on the Skylon space plane is, I think, inspirational. And I very much hope that somebody like Alan, possibly Alan, will actually be the person who makes the breakthrough and makes it possible to actually get into space more cheaply and opens up all the possibilities that that would entail.
The Arthur Award, Arthur Clarke Awards, that was at the recent space conference.
Yes.
How long have these space conferences been going?
The first conference we put on was entirely about British rocket history, and that first one, we've done 10 now. The very first few were entirely about rocket history, but that gradually grew and expanded, and we started looking at the history of UK space science as well as the history of the UK rocket programmes. And then we started attracting students who liked hearing about the history, but we started putting on recruitment events and seminars on research. And eventually this year, it was decided that it should become the UK Space Conference, and it should take in all aspects of British space endeavours, including quite a lot of astronomy.
Now, that's something that's a joint venture between both of you. Leslie, you're involved in the space conference as well, aren't you?
My role is really to make sure the sums add up.
Oh, no, I was there. You've done a lot more than that, but certainly... how do you decide who does what?
She tells me what I should tell her to do, when she does it.
No, that's not true. Dave is really good at talking to people, networking, getting the right people along to give talks and persuading people that this is something they should be involved in. He's very good at saying to people, why don't you come along? We'll let you come today for free, see what you think of it, but next time you'll have to pay. And everybody who's ever been to the conference has gone away saying, I want to come back, I want to come back. Now, I sort out things like registration, room allocations, catering, conference dinner menus, the Sir Arthur Clarke Award dinner menu. Jerry Stone is the person who deals with the Sir Arthur Clarke Awards. Mm-hmm. I'm chair of the judging panel, but he makes all the contacts with the nominees and the judges.
Now, for somebody who hasn't been to a space conference, what sort of things would they see if they did come for the first time?
Well, this year, for example, they could go and hear Eric Brown talking about test flying. They could have gone and heard Joe Engel talking about flying the shuttle down from space manually. They could have gone and talked to George Abbey and found out about how a lot of Brits were involved in the early days of NASA and how they wouldn't have had a NASA space programme without British input. You could also have gone to educational sessions. Mm-hmm. You could have gone to research sessions. It's too big a question.
And there was also the rocket competition.
The rocket competition is held by UK ROC. They're not actually part of our conference, but we share facilities. And it was a real shame that we had so much rain and the children couldn't set the rockets off this year.
Yes, it's very much a hands-on. You see, if the weather had allowed, we would have seen some rocket launches, but there's lots of exhibits.
I think the kids did have a great time. A lot of them had the chance to meet Joe Engel, a real live astronaut who was charming and approachable, and talked to them in a very very easy manner, which they all enjoyed. He was very patient and he was great. They also had the chance to meet Bridget, which is the Mars rover prototype development model that is produced by EADS Astrium. And they had a chance to, I would say play, but perhaps that's not the right word. They had the chance to interact with Bridget, and they had the chance to talk to people who were at the top of the UK space science. I think the kids who came had a great time, despite the fact they were unfortunately unable to launch their rockets. But the winning team will go out to America and get a chance to launch rockets in America, in part of the TARC competition in America.
Space Conference is the big soiree in the whole year. Are there other events during the year besides that?
No, but I think that's going to change. It's interesting that the new civil space strategy put forward by the government, and more particularly by the British National Space Centre, says that there should be a UK National Space Conference. I think in actual fact that a number of organisations feel that there perhaps ought to be three or four events during the year focusing on different aspects of space, because there is so much space activity in the UK, which I'm afraid is... it's suggested is one of the UK's best kept secrets. The fact that the UK does so much in space in terms of industry research, I don't think is really well enough known to the UK general public. Certainly what we see ourselves as focusing on in particular is giving a platform to UK space scientists and astronomers to actually reach out to general public. So we see our conference as about outreach to the general public and about education, and basically giving everybody who's involved in UK space science and astronomy a chance to meet together. I think that there is room for other events with different focuses. You know, we can't do it all. We'll do as much as we can.
Well, having seen both of you with your mobile phone almost planted to next year's ear for the whole of the 2 days that I was there, I do think at times you end up doing it all. When is the next conference Have we got a date for that yet?
The provisional date for next year's conference is April 1st to April 4th. So we're moving to 4 days, which will give us a chance to have more people and more different activities. And we'd be delighted to hear from any of your listeners, Gerbier, to hear their suggestions, perhaps their kind of wish lists. And we will try and do our very best to make some of those wishes come true.
You've been doing this for 10 years together as a husband and wife team. It's great to see that you're still married.
Only just.
How long do you see this? Did you see an end in sight? Did you carry on doing this on a year-to-year basis?
When we first started doing this, we thought the first one would be the only one. Mm-hmm. But so many people said, we'd like to do this again. So we did it again. Each year we think it's going to be our last one, and each year we find people saying, be back next year, be back next year. So we don't actually visualise 5, 10, 15, 20 years in the future. We never thought we'd do 10. But I should inform you that one of the houses is already a quarter full for next year. We've already had 2 papers offered for the programme next year, and there are a number of people who have told us they'll be back. So I think we are doing it.
I think it's great when Professor John Zanecki and George Abbey, who used to run the Johnson Space Flight Centre, and Joe Engel and Reg Turnell and various other people just turn around to you and say, you know, we'd like to come back next year, kind of puts a bit of pressure on you to make sure that you actually make sure that there is a next year. This year we had an average of about 200 people there over three days. So not the same 200 people on each of those 3 days, but 200 people on each day. The accommodation was virtually 100% full, and I'm afraid we're actually turning people away. We are looking at putting on stream more rooms, more accommodation, and expanding even more next year. But I think that it clearly shows what enthusiasm there is out there. And we think that it's important to bring people in the UK space community together and to actually get out to the general public and mobilise them to go out to the general public and say, the UK is doing some really special things in space. Get excited about it. And let's get the kids excited about it.
And that's one reason why we do the Sir Arthur Clarke Awards. Mm. Because when people actually receive one of these awards, it suddenly becomes a really big thing to them. Mm. That they're not just carrying on doing their normal work and getting no recognition and nobody knows what they're doing. It's a way of saying, hey, the general public have voted. Mm. These votes have not come from industry to industry. Mm. They are all general public votes. Therefore, people are aware of what you're doing and they think you deserve a reward for it. Even if you get into the shortlist, you know, that is quite something to be proud of.
You've certainly brought some unique experiences to many people, including me. Dave and Leslie Wright from the British Rocketry Oral History Programme. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much, Gerbier.
Want to be a rocket scientist? Well, a new book from a rocket scientist, Lucy Rogers, may be a good start. Lucy is also the chairman of Vectis Astronomical Society on the Isle of Wight. Their website must be one of the most elaborate. Check it out. I have included a link in the episode notes, but turn down the volume on your PC first. Dr. Lucy Rogers, welcome to AstroTalk UK.
Thank you.
Before we talk about your interest in rockets, where are you from?
Born in Portsmouth, brought up in Folkestone, went to university in Lancaster, sponsored by a company in Newcastle, so worked over there, moved back to Manchester for a job, and now I'm living on the Isle of Wight.
You're on the run.
No, I've settled now, back by the seaside.
Right, and you're a member of the local astronomical society there.
Yeah, I'm chairman of Vectis Astronomical Society, the Isle of Wight Astronomical Society.
And what sort of layout? Do you have an observatory there?
We've got a lovely observatory with a 12-inch Meade telescope. The observatory is in Newchurch, which is right in the middle of the island. Nice dark skies. We've just had the inaugural Isle of Wight star party, where we took over a holiday camp on the south of the island, where we had almost 180 degree views of the south straight across the sea. The nearest sky glow was from Cherbourg, about 60 miles away. If it hadn't been the weekend when the worst storms and 90 miles an hour winds were forecast, then it would have been even better. We did have some clear viewing, and it was a great social event. We had some lovely speakers, and I really enjoyed it.
The participants, did they come from far away, from the mainland?
Oh, we had visitors from the mainland. We had people come from Plymouth, people come from Cambridge. It was advertised in the magazines like Astronomy Now and Sky at Night. So people who happened to be on holiday on the Isle of Wight that week hadn't told their wives and just popped along for the evening. It was great. But we had a lot of people from the southern counties.
Do you think of yourself as an amateur astronomer?
Oh, I'm definitely still amateur.
Now, you mentioned Astronomy Now, and I think a lot of people will recognise your name from Astronomy Now. How long have you been writing?
That's probably about 5 years now.
Recently, you've written a book.
I have.
And it's called... Lovely title. What's it called?
It's Only Rocket Science, an introduction in plain English. It's everything you wanted to know about rockets, without maths, without formulae. So there's bits on how to design a rocket, how it gets up into space, all about its orbits. There's sections on what happens to an astronaut's body in space and how all your gizzards float about. How to go to the toilet in space is covered in there, but there's also sections on how to track a satellite as it's going overhead, and where you can go and what technologies we're likely to have in the future.
Now, I've had a look at the book. It's very easy to read for certainly somebody with my eyesight, and you're quite right, there isn't a great deal of technical, mathematical stuff. It's the sort of thing that your mum could read then.
Yep. My mum, who's a florist with no interest in space or engineering, has actually managed to plough her way through a few of the chapters and says she actually understands it. I think almost got her, she enjoyed it, but she didn't go that far.
What got your interest in rocketry?
Well, I've always been interested in space. You know, I wanted to be an astronaut when I was 18. I did the correct career. I've got a degree in engineering, and I'm still the right age. I was just on the wrong nationality.
Well, now that you're 21, you've still got plenty of time.
Oh, this is true.
Excellent title, It's Only Rocket Science. Does that reflect the fact that this is quite old technology and therefore very well tested?
It is. I mean, the Chinese first invented rockets probably about AD 600, and they were writing about them, using them as powered artillery, in the siege of Kaifeng Fu in AD 1232. So they've been around a while. Some of the technology, particularly solid rocket motors, has been known about for a long time, but actually controlling it to get it to exactly where you want to go, that has taken more and more development. Wernher von Braun, he said, it takes 65,000 errors before you're qualified to make a rocket. You know, 1957, when Sputnik 1 was first launched, everyone was thinking... Everyone began to believe it's not science fiction anymore, it is happening. And so, because the Americans were trying to catch up, all the brightest people were taken to work as rocket scientists. And that's where it came about. Rocket scientists are only the brightest and the best. And rocket science is so complicated that no one can really have all the knowledge to make every part of a rocket nowadays, or any time. Wernher von Braun had a big team behind him, as did the Russians.
And right now, there are several countries around the world who have launch facilities. How do you place UK's prospects in the near future?
I'm not really sure of where we can go or what's feasible to do. Joining in with other agencies and being collaborators, we are already involved in many projects, just not in the launch capabilities. We've already got small satellite systems working. We've got many teams around the UK in collaboration with other groups. The SOHO satellites, Smart One, going to the moon.
So would you say that the future for Britain in space is an optimistic one?
I'd like to think so. If we can find the correct funding and the political will, there's such a potential in space. The spin-offs, for example, there's a piece of the equipment, I believe, that went to Cassini, on the Cassini mission, that's now used to identify tuberculosis in developing countries.
Uh-huh. Well, it's good to speak to real scientists who are working in the real business, and your book is, I suppose, in many ways a good starter for any younger people who would be interested in this kind of line of work.
I hope so, but it's a general introduction to many aspects within rocket science. And actually, if you've read that, you've got a good primer in many of the different aspects. Because when you focus on something, maybe you do a degree, you'll maybe just focus on propulsion systems or on the design of the aerodynamics.
And I notice you've got a chapter there, perhaps specifically for amateur astronomers.
Yes, there's a chapter in it on how to track satellites from your back garden. And it covers both optically tracking things, either with the naked eye or with your binoculars, but also listening to satellites as they go overhead. You can hear some of the telemetry from the International Space Station and the Space Shuttle as they go overhead.
And what do you personally see in your future? What are you going to be doing, some more writing, or perhaps something more specific in rocketry?
I enjoy writing. I enjoy taking the technical English and turning it into plain English. So maybe I'll do a bit more on that. But I'm also still tinkering away and engineer by training. And
that's right.
I want to get back out in the workshop and tinker.
Your book, Lucy, is it available right now?
Mm-hmm. It's published by Springer, and you can find it on Amazon and the Springer website.
And, of course, people can find more about you on your website.
www.itsonlyrocketscience.com. Thanks.
Dr. Lucy Rogers, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to AstroTalk UK. AT UK is a non-profit project produced and recorded by Gurbir Singh. He nor any of the participants are paid for their contribution. AT UK's content is not validated against any authoritative source, and all the views and opinions are held by those who choose to express them. If you have a topic of interest you would like to discuss on AT UK, drop me a note, info@astrotalkuk.org.